Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that makes using different currencies easy. With Wise, you can send and spend money worldwide at the real-time mid-market exchange rate. There are no hidden fees either. See exactly what you'll pay up front, every time. Join 16 million customers already saving with Wise. To learn how Wise could work for you, download the app or visit wise.com.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor'ı dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Dünya ekte The Fifth Floor farnak amidi sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. In June, Mexico elected its first female president.
Muchas gracias. Que viva México! Viva México! Viva México!
Her name is Claudia Sheinbaum. Before her life in politics, she worked as an environmental scientist and has been the mayor of Mexico City since 2018. She has long been seen as the successor of Mexico's current president and won the recent election with a landslide victory and will take office on the 1st of October. Joining me today to discuss Mexico's new leader, I have Luis Fajardo, Latin America analyst with BBC Monitoring in Miami, and Laura Garcia of BBC Mundo, who is Mexican, and she's in the studio with me. So let's start by finding out more about the political scene in Mexico. Luis, I'm going to start with you. Give us the political backdrop of Mexico when this election began.
Farhana, the current president of Mexico, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, is a left-wing leader from the Morena Party, a left-wing nationalist party, and he has been the president since 2018. He has called his government the fourth transformation. He says that Mexico had three previous moments in which basically everything changed politically for Mexico, moments like the Mexican Revolution. And he says that his government has been a period of transformation for Mexico equivalent to these big landmarks in Mexican history.
So, Laura, let me bring you in here. AMLO, the current president, and his left-wing party, they remained popular all throughout his presidency. But why was that? What was he doing right, basically?
And let's qualify that when you say popular, you mean really popular.
He's really popular.
He's got a little bit over 60% popularity, which is something that a lot of world leaders would be really jealous of.
Yeah, exactly.
And that hasn't really changed throughout his tenure. And it kind of builds on a couple different things. One of them, Luis already mentioned, which is this idea that his government and his movement represents la cuarta transformación, the fourth transformation. Mm. And people buy into that, that him and his political movement want to change Mexico in such a deep way. Now, this is a self-applied label, and we're going to have to see what historians say, but that kind of rhetoric of doing it for the people really resonates. The second one is that Andrés Manuel López Obrador has been a known quantity in Mexican politics for a really long time. This man has been around for four decades. He started out in his hometown in Tabasco. He then kind of grew politically. He was a director of an organization for indigenous affairs, and then he got into Workers' Trades Party. He's run for president a couple times. So people have known him for a really long time, what he stands for and where he comes from. And then the third thing that has made him really popular is that he's actually quite good. An analyst that we have spoken to at BBC Mundo say he's really good at managing his image.
Mm-hmm.
He's good at the comms. He's good at talking. And he also started a tradition that Claudia Sheinbaum is going to continue called Las Mañaneras. And these are 7 a.m. press conferences every day where the president gets to set the agenda and talk for a couple hours. Sometimes they go on for 3 hours. And they become the space where the government can not just say what they're planning, but also sometimes dismiss criticism, fight back against questions and say, oh, I have other data. Like, yours is not right. I have other data and this is where we're going.
Okay, that's very interesting. And this popularity of the political left in Mexico is quite different from what is happening in the rest of Latin American countries, isn't that, Luis?
For many years, the left in Latin America was making gains, but now this seems to have changed. One of the things we do at BBC Monitoring is looking at trends in social media in Latin America. Mm. And we see that the really popular leaders in Latin America right now tend to be from the right. One of the things that was interesting about López Obrador, he was very, very popular domestically, but he actually almost made a point of not going overseas. He said that he didn't really like overseas trips, and he said he was not very interested in projecting Mexican influence, or at least seeing as meddling in other countries' affairs. So people are looking and waiting to see what is going to happen with Sheinbaum, this new figure from the left, and what kind of impact she's going to have across Latin America, where, of course, many other countries are facing very big political transformations and political controversies.
Like big shoes to fill.
It does seem like big shoes to fill. And that is both, I think, what has propelled Claudia Sheinbaum's career and also what is going to be her biggest challenge.
Mm, exactly. So, you know, Claudia, she's a woman, of course, and she was the first female mayor of Mexico City. And now the first ever female president of Mexico, the country in its whole history. We have a clip of her, actually. She's addressing this issue. Let's have a listen.
No llego sola. Llegamos todas. Con nuestras heroínas que nos dieron patria. Con nuestras ancestras. Nuestras madres. Nuestras hijas y nuestras nietas.
Laura, what is she saying?
So she's speaking to the fact that she's the first, but she doesn't arrive here alone. Mm. And that's what she says. I don't arrive here alone. I come with the heroines that gave us history, our mothers, our granddaughters, and kind of acknowledging the fact that she is the latest, but not the only, in what has been quite a long fight for women's political representation in my country.
Mm.
She got elected 200 years after Mexico has been electing presidents.
Wow.
It took us 200 years to get to that point. And that is the struggle that she speaks to. And it comes from all sorts of different sides and not just politics. This really interesting transformation that Mexico is going through when it comes to access to rights and diversity.
So as a Mexican woman, can you tell us what life is like in Mexico for a woman? And what is the gender politics like?
Being a woman in Mexico is actually quite a complex thing. Like being a woman everywhere.
Anywhere.
Exactly. Like being a woman anywhere. But I think we need to situate Mexico in the context of a little bit of stats. It's the second country in Latin America for gender-based violence and femicides, just behind Brazil. That is enormous. And the stats change all the time, but it's something around 9 women a day die because of gender-based violence. And that is, for a country of 120 million people, an enormous part of the population that's living a very specific experience. I haven't lived in Mexico for the past 13 years, and every time I go back, I'm kind of surprised by, A, how much the country has progressed, and also by how much it hasn't, and how much of it is instilled in culture and microaggressions and little things that we say to each other, that we say to younger women, that we say to our nieces, or even the mere fact that if there's a family dinner, all the women stand up to clear up the plates and all the men stay sat down, which again is not exclusive to Mexico, but it kind of represents that complex. Yes, there's tons of things that are changing, but it also hasn't changed as much. And violence, gender-based violence, is an enormous problem.
So despite all of this, you know, the gender-based violence and a lot of discrimination and inequality and sexism, as you mentioned, there has been progress and we have witnessed. And now a female president. What do you think is behind this speed of progress as well?
Mm. So the change that's happened in Mexican politics and kind of Mexican society doesn't necessarily happen out where the cameras are.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a ton of changes in laws throughout the years that have helped to start qualifying and quantifying the experience of women. So, for example, the fact that 2017 feminicide became a thing in the penal code, in the legal penal code. Mm. So now incidents of gender-based violence can be investigated and quantified with a name. And specifically in politics, there's been a succession of laws that have forced political parties to nominate 50% of their candidates to be women at the three levels of government. And that has forced a change that maybe the Mexican electorate was already ready for a little bit beforehand. We heard that from one of the experts that we talked to at BBC Mundo, of like that reticence to put women on the ballot maybe came more from parties than people. And once this law started to force parties to put women on the ballot, then things started to change. We only had our first congresswoman in 1954, right?
That's so a year after women got the vote.
A year after women got the vote, which is still bonkers to think about, that women can vote until 1953 in my country. So that's 1954. Then in 1988, that's 34 years later, Congress was still only 10% women. In the next 30 years, with these laws and with all these changes, by 2018, that's when we almost got to parity. So the change has been accelerated by forcing some of the structures around how women can access political representation.
And do you think, because she's a woman, Claudia, the general public expect her to focus on women's rights in Mexico more?
So before she got elected, and a couple of weeks before, I spent a bunch of time speaking to women in Mexico who come from all sorts of different spaces. So an Olympic athlete, someone who does science, a teacher in a local school. And a bunch of them reflected to me the hope that they have of someone who maybe has had a more similar life experience to theirs in office will maybe be more receptive to their needs as a woman, right? A bunch of them also reflected that this is quite an unfair thing that we put on the woman who is the first to do anything, right? Whether you're the first astronaut or the first president, you carry that weight on your shoulders. And putting that, the weight of fixing something that is structural and complex on a single person can be quite unfair. I think there's definitely an expectation that because she is the first and because she is a woman, she will bring some attention to that. What we know of her politically comes from her time as mayor of Mexico City. And her policies were not necessarily super aimed at women. And that doesn't mean that's not going to change. She does have a couple of proposals. She wants to set up special prosecutors to investigate gender-based violence to get more data. She's a scientist at heart. She wants more data to understand the problem. I heard two phrases when I was interviewing all of these women about what it meant for them to have a female president. One of them said, "It's great. We have a woman president in 2024. That's amazing. We did it. I'm not that excited about her. I'm excited about whoever takes office in 2060. The young boy or girl who is going to grow up in a Mexico where they can imagine a presidency regardless of gender." And the other phrase that really stuck to me came from a feminist academic. And she said, "Feminine body does not guarantee feminist thoughts."
Exactly.
And maybe that's something we need to keep in check and make sure that we remember in these conversations about Claudia. She's not just the first woman to get there. She's also president. She has a job to do. And that's where the scrutiny should come in.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that makes using different currencies easy. With Wise, you can send and spend money worldwide at the real-time mid-market exchange rate. There are no hidden fees either. See exactly what you'll pay up front, every time. Join 16 million customers already saving with Wise. To learn how Wise could work for you, download the app or visit wise.com.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
This. You're listening to The Fifth Floor. I'm Farhanak Hamidi, and I'm with Laura Garcia from BBC Mundo and Luis Fajardo from BBC Monitoring. We're talking about Mexico's new president, Claudia Sheinbaum, and some of the challenges she will have to face when she'll take office on October 1st. So, Luis, one of the main issues in Mexico is crime, and more specifically, organized crime. What was AMLO's approach, and was he successful in handling it?
Well, as many things with López Obrador, it's extremely, extremely controversial, and it will depend on who you ask about it. And López Obrador began his government by saying, we shouldn't give them bullets, but hugs instead of bullets. And people were gobsmacked to hear this. I mean, a lot of people said that was incredibly naive, incredibly irresponsible, that how would they expect to confront some of the most dangerous and powerful criminal organizations on earth with the threat of giving them a hug? I think many analysts would say that the general picture is mixed. He has, to an extent, avoided the total confrontation and the total war that was seen in other moments of Mexican history, which created a great amount of bloodshed. And many people would say that did not resolve the drug issue. Of course, Mexico remains an extremely, extremely important part of international drug trafficking and drug trafficking to the United States, certainly. And years and years of extreme violence have not solved that. Certainly, drug cartels haven't gone anywhere. He can claim that number of homicides in the country, which to a great extent are related to the drug war, have somewhat decreased during his administration. There's like also controversy about the data, as López Obrador tends to say, I have another data, when the data is not necessarily
in his favor.
making his argument. But there has been, I think most people agree that the murders have gone down. Some people talk about a 10% decrease. It is still huge. I mean, Mexico has more than 30,000 murders a year, which is incredibly high. It's one of the highest in the world. But he has tried other things. And I think clearly many Mexicans thought that it was worth trying other things.
And for Claudia, of course, this is one of the issues that she will have to tackle during her presidency. She had an interview with the BBC back in 2021 when she was the mayor of Mexico City. Let's hear her describe how she was tackling the crime back then.
Actually, we have reduced the violence in the city in around 45% in 3 years for many, many reasons. First, to go through the causes, to rescue the young people. We have built two universities in Mexico City. And the other thing is that we have a plan to go with the Fiscalía and the police, law and order.
So, Luis, what do you make of that? Do you think this will give us an idea of how she might be going to tackle the issue of crime and organized crime?
She has made a point of saying that she doesn't want drastic changes from what López Obrador did. Of course, López Obrador was her political mentor. Many people would suggest that she owes a lot of her political career to him. So she does not, especially not in this transitional moment, she does not want to appear that she's going completely against him. She has suggested some changes, and some of them were mentioned in that interview, like, for example, improving the technical capacity for investigation in the police. What her critics say is that one thing is Mexico City, a very different thing is the rest of the country. By and large, the horrible violence that Mexico has experienced in these years has not been as intense in Mexico City. There was kind of an agreement. The cartels had not emphasized on placing violence in the capital city. So some people would suggest that these police tactics are appropriate in a setting like Mexico City. They're going to be much more difficult to apply in parts of the periphery in Mexico, in rural areas in Mexico, where you're fighting against what people would describe as private armies by some of these drug cartels.
Claudia Sheinbaum is really interesting because she has and has had a foot in politics and a foot in science throughout her career. And you see that reflected in some of her policy proposals. So, for example, one of the things she's talked about to help address the crime problem in Mexico is education. And it's obviously not going to be the only thing she's going to propose, and it's not the only thing she's talked about, like Luis has explained, but it just kind of reflects how her presidency and what we know of her politically is never too far away of what we know of her as a scientist.
And obviously, this election itself has been quite violent. Some of the candidates in other cities have been killed. And obviously, everybody knows that being a politician in Mexico is dangerous. What kind of approach do you think Claudia will have to her own personal security, Luis?
As you mentioned, politics in Mexico has become extremely risky. Some people were describing the recent election as one of the most violent, or even the most violent in recent Mexican history. Some NGOs talk about 30 candidates being killed in the last election. So nothing to take lightly. Garcia, Omar Garcia, the person who's going to be in charge of security, the security chief in her cabinet, himself was the victim of an attempted assassination when he was occupying the same position in Mexico City. So certainly there's going to be a great deal of concern about how this evolves. Again, Sheinbaum has said that she wants to have a very efficient approach to the crime fighting. And I think another big question here is the role that the armed forces are going to play. Mexico is known across Latin America because of a very particular relation between the civilians and the military. When in across the 20th century, many countries in Latin America had constant military interventions in power. Mexico was different. Some people criticized López Obrador because he became very reliant on the military, of course, for security and for many other things.
Laura, you are smiling and nodding. What do you want to add to this?
I wanted to add, well, first of all, I recognize everything that Luis is saying, because I remember growing up in a Mexico where you trust the army. The army shows up, you're safe. The police shows up, you're not that sure, right? And that has changed because the police has become more militarized, or they work together, or the military comes in and does the work of police officers. One of the most interesting things that I found out researching ahead of the election is that this political violence not only affects, obviously, the candidates and how many people are willing to put themselves forward to participate in politics because of it, but also political participation. So an organization called Data Cívica, and they kind of look at how people vote or don't vote after a candidate in their local area has had either an attempted assassination or they got killed, and it drops 3%. Of participation. It kind of just reflects the fact that this violence in politics turns everybody off, as it would, because obviously if your safety is not guaranteed, then you don't want to participate, whether you're on the ballot or whether you're voting.
And Laura, of course, many people didn't vote for Claudia. What is their criticism of her?
So Claudia's success is also her biggest challenge. And it's this humongous inheritance that she has from Andrés Manuel López Obrador and the party and the movement that he leads and he represents. So all the criticisms that are aimed against him are kind of aimed against her as well as the successor. And she has been aligned with the president ever since he ran for president in 2006. She's been a prominent member of this party. So it's not something that has happened to her by accident. Like, she has put herself in that spot and walked right alongside AMLO. And the criticisms come from a couple of different places. So the first one is that she's just a carbon copy of the president, which she has tried to fight back by saying, what I bring is continuity, but not the same thing, right? The other criticism, or the big criticism, is aimed at the party, Morena, and their allies, because they have an overwhelming majority to change laws really quickly. And we have seen this in the last month of AMLO being in power. He has pushed through quite an enormous package of law reforms. The criticism aimed at Claudia and AMLO and their party is that they're becoming this like hegemonic power. I think there's a third round of criticisms that are aimed at Claudia, but these are more gendered because she's a scientist. She's methodical. That's who she is. She thinks in data, and she can be really direct and just say what she's thinking or ask for what she wants. And in Mexican culture, that is quite weird for women, for anybody, but for women to do.
Yeah.
So she's sometimes called intense. She's called direct. She's called hard. They call her cold Claudia. And that's a mixture of the fact that she is quite a methodical person. She's a scientist in her formation. But also maybe we wouldn't be saying these same adjectives if she was a man.
So, Luis, you're based in the U.S., and of course, Mexico's longest border is with the USA, and it's very politically charged, this border. We have a clip of Claudia where she actually mentions the U.S. in her acceptance speech. Let's have a listen.
Con los Estados Unidos habrá una relación de amistad, respeto mutuo e igualdad como hasta ahora ha sido.
So, Luis, what is she saying there, and what challenges does she face?
She's saying, as every Mexican president is basically compelled to say, that the relation with the U.S. will be characterized by respect, mm-hmm. by sovereignty, which is, of course, a very big issue for a country which is facing the most powerful nation in the world. Clearly, Donald Trump has been, throughout his career, extremely, extremely controversial in his statements about Mexico. The very first statement he made when he was a candidate, the person who was the president of Mexico then, Enrique Peña Nieto, he was one of the, maybe even the first head of state who agreed to meet with Trump back when he was a candidate who was not taken entirely seriously mm. by many people in the U.S. Of course, the implication, they realized that if he won, Mexico would have to work with him. I think the situation hasn't changed that much now. They do realize it's a very asymmetrical relation, and they will have to attend to it. If Kamala Harris wins, there's also still a very large space for controversy and conflict. Harris will likely have to pursue very tough immigration policies because there's a growing political impulse in the U.S. Mm-hmm. to move in that direction by both parties. Immigration is a very sensitive issue. Of course, the drug trafficking issue is extremely sensitive. So again, whoever occupies the White House, at some point there are going to be conflicts about sovereignty and jurisdiction and all this, but Mexican leaders know that they have to work with this situation. Certainly, if for example, Donald Trump was to follow up with some of his campaign promises, like using the U.S. military to target Mexican cartels within Mexican territory, that would be extremely, yeah. extremely controversial, but we'll just have to wait and see.
And it was mentioned a few times during this conversation that Claudia Sheinbaum is a scientist, an environmental scientist. Do you think the environment will be a big part of her presidency, both of you?
I think that one of the criticisms that has been directed at Sheinbaum is that, of course, she's a world-class climate scientist. She was at elite American universities studying this. But her announced policies are controversial from a climate policy point of view. For example, she has suggested, as of course predecessors have also done, that oil is going to play a huge part in Mexico's, at least short-term, economic future. Pemex, the state-owned oil company, is a huge part of Mexican public finance stability. And she has not given any indication that Mexico is going to stop putting a big emphasis on oil anytime soon. So some people would see it as controversial. But of course, she is an expert. She has participated in, again, world-class research on Mexico specifically. So people are hoping that throughout her government, she will manage to get some of these initiatives across.
So when I was preparing to have this conversation, I listened to the podcast that she ran ahead of the election. Mm. And one of the things that struck me the most is that as a Nobel Prize winning environmental engineer, she says, I think it's key to our energy transition that we strengthen our petrochemical industry, which to some people would feel like complete opposites, yeah. right? And it kind of represents these nuances that Luis was explaining of how she views the need to balance mm-hmm. the needs of Mexican society, as well as whatever that means for our energy transition. But again, the show's just about to start. So just like we hang a bunch of weight on her shoulders for being the first woman president, we're also hanging a bunch of weight on her shoulder for being the first Nobel environment engineer who's going to be president of Mexico, which is a country that's hugely dependent on oil.
So thank you, Luis Fajardo from BBC Monitoring in Miami and Laura Garcia of BBC Mundo. I'm Farhana Kamidi, and the Fifth Floor team was Alice Joya and Caroline Ferguson. The studio manager was Donald McDonald. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that makes using different currencies easy. With Wise, you can send and spend money worldwide at the real-time mid-market exchange rate. There are no hidden fees either. See exactly what you'll pay up front, every time. Join 16 million customers already saving with Wise. To learn how Wise could work for you, download the app or visit wise.com.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems, and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.